Hey everybody, Shane here. Are you and your friends trying to figure out what to do tonight? Hit up do314.com, the best place to find out about all the concerts and comedy shows and art openings and other cool stuff going on around St. Louis every night of the week. They're also giving away tickets to shows and festivals all the time. Go follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at do314. Take it from me, I'm always trying to find shows, and this is where I go, do314.com.
Ooh la la, you're listening to Shane on the Rock Paper Podcast. This is Lauren, and I suggest you listen more often to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode 78. I'm hanging out on a beautiful summer day in St. Louis here at Blueberry Hill with my guest today is Lern.
Hi.
From KSHE. So
welcome, thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show.
This is awesome. This is amazing.
Yeah.
This is so much cooler than my job because I don't get to be at Blueberry Hill drinking a beer during my job.
Right.
But during this, I do.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful.
And you said this is your first experience with podcasting?
It is. Nobody else has asked me to be on a podcast, so you are the first, my friend.
Well, I'm honored.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is exciting. So one thing that caught my eye, and we have a lot of mutual friends, I guess, and but you do the local produce section.
Yeah.
And that's really the backbone of this show is all local music.
So
and I know Fivefold, mm-hmm. Various hands.
Glass Calvary.
I haven't had them on the show yet.
They're amazing.
Yeah. And Logos. Mm-hmm. Those three bands have been on the show. But yeah, I'm still yeah, it's been a year. I'm trying to work my way around the city. I give out the stickers, and that's one of my things. Is like I said, my goal is to take over every guitar case or drum kit across the city. So
my husband will put this on his guitar case at home. He's got many a sticker on it.
Yeah,
so
very cool.
No, that is neat. I'm you know, the local produce section was my baby with my videographer and producer Ben Vogel saying, who works at the station with us. Ben is a bit younger than I, but he was actually an intern for, I think it was either KSHE or The Point, and he's so great with video, and that's literally his niche. And so one day he and I were just rapping, and I said, you know, how cool would it be? I have this idea that's kind of like Last Call with Carson Daly meets local meets St. Louis with like a KSHE twist on it. And so thus, like, the local produce section was born. And what started out as, I mean, Ben and I just do it out of our heart and soul. Like, we don't get paid extra from the station or anything. Like, we just go out and we pursue people and the bands and the people that we focus on. And we have creative control of it. So what you're seeing is really kind of, it's just a birth of an idea every episode. And we're really excited that we're in the second season. And funny that you should be here, because I just wrapped up episode 3. I'm covering, it's not a band, it's Vintage Vinyl. I'm showcasing them. And so we literally, right before I came to Blueberry Hill to meet you, I was over there wrapping up my final interview with Jim Utz, and we were doing the intros and things. So it just kind of all worked out that way.
Record store day, I was invited by Jim to guest DJ for the day. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, we had an hour set just to,
isn't that the, I've gotten to do that too. Isn't that just like, you feel like such a badass in that booth? Now, did you do vinyl or CDs?
Well, so in order to kind of cross-promote the show, I made a CD of all the, some of my favorites from the first year of the show.
That's so
and
cool.
So I did, I played a Fivefold song, their brand new one, there I played like Jeremiah Johnson Band and Driving Wheel and we had a couple of live recordings
from Record Store Day.
No, from the show that I've recorded on this mic, just acoustic performances, and I played those also.
That's so neat.
My friend,
Apollo's Daughter, they recorded a song. It's called Kurt Russell's Muscles.
And I love Kurt Russell's Muscles in real life.
Yeah. But it's an acoustic song, and that I recorded on, and you know, they have the full version out on their EP. But
how neat!
I played that there, and I also I played The Urge, like It's Getting Hectic, and I cut Steve from the show to say, you know, hey, this is Steve Ewing, you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Oh, cool! Like a little liner for you. That's so neat.
I put those like all in there, and I think it went real well. It's not like I didn't get like a lot of people, you know,
pumped
coming,
up.
Yeah, coming up there.
People weren't like flashing you from the crowd of Ryan trying to buy vinyl.
Yeah.
Don't worry, that didn't happen to me either.
All right. But it was still just, like I said, an honor to be invited and like to be acknowledged that Jim noticed my name at least, you know.
Isn't that
like
the coolest? And what's funny is about this second season of the local produce section is like we wanted to broaden it up because here's the deal that pisses me off, literally, is the fact that, you know, everybody's all about local music, all local music. People that aren't in local bands are like, oh, we need to support local, da, 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 da. But the deal is people don't go out and actually support the local music. They expect other people to do it. And for me, and our whole first season, aside from one episode where we had some film producers on, it was all of these bands that I either knew personally, like Logos, or that I put out kind of an eagle call, like, I'm looking for local bands that are good. Email me an MP3 of your stuff, send me a CD to the station, let me pick you out of a, you know, a bag of 50 and then go see what your band is like. And a lot of them weren't Keishi, you know, not all of them sounded like Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
Like Glass Calvary was so unique and so kind of like new wave and had their own sound. And for me personally, it was about wanting my listeners of my show to open their mind a bit more or maybe have that nostalgia of, hey, remember 30 years ago when you were 30 years younger and you loved everything you heard, trying to get that back into 50-year-old lives, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But what's neat about Vintage Vinyl is for this season, we started it off with Various Hands, which is an outstanding local band. Mm-hmm. If you don't know Jeff Nations, you need to.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite musicians in St. Louis. We had them, and he and I worked for literally a year to get Various Hands on the local produce section, and our schedules never lined up because he was so busy, luckily, and I was so busy. But we kicked it off there with them, episode one. And then we went to Busch Stadium with John Hewlett, my co-host in the mornings. And we kind of went in a sports Cardinals area because I want people to experience John's other job that he has and see John as this literally, John Hewlett is a human being that is superhuman. Like, he does everything. He does Keishi for 39 years, he does the Cardinals for 31 years, he's a full-time dad. Like, John is superhuman, and I love him so much, and so I wanted people to celebrate him. And then with Vintage Vinyl for this upcoming third episode that's due out on July 1st, I really wanted to pay homage to a record store that helped shape my musical interests and culture. And so much of Vintage Vinyl in the Loop is like, you know, this is where people come together. Like, I don't think, and that's kind of the direction of it, is it's not just a record store where you can go get an EP. Like, they celebrate local music, they celebrate local everything. They even have a Keishi Classic, like, showcase sometimes with all classic artists. They celebrate all cultures. Like, it's really a melting pot of greatness, and music is what keeps everybody together. So it's like, for me, I wanted to make sure that people celebrated them, and literally every episode is just a celebration of something. So it's really been interesting.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I try to do a little bit of that, like, myself with especially with the local music, but I've also been trying to record, like, Blueberry Hill here and other, like, I've been trying to promote venues as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Vintage Vinyl and try to keep these places going where people have these, you know, places for live music to play.
Absolutely. And, yeah, Various Hands played in the Duck Room. Yeah. That's where we filmed it.
Yeah.
It was so neat.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, those guys, I got to record with just Jeff. I didn't get to record with the whole full band, but it was me and Jeff and Chris, and we sat at a St. Louis Bread Company, and it was a good time.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. And congrats on your year of podcasting.
Yeah, thank you.
My gosh, 78 episodes is quite a milestone. What are you going to do for the 100th
episode? I don't know. Yeah, I guess I better get to planning.
You got to do somebody big.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to do, like, Joe Edwards or, gosh, like, Mayor Slayer. You got to get somebody big and get them on here. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I've had Joe mentioned a lot and Chuck Berry and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it'd be really cool, but it's also, like, it's,
You want to hear a funny story about Chuck Berry?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a really great story. So I got married on November 1st last year.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. My husband, Tim, is a woodworking man. He likes to go to Lowe's like any normal dude and get lumber and come home and make a wreck of things. But he was at Lowe's one day and he was in line buying whatever he was buying. And I was at home, and this is like October, let's just call it like October 1st, just to put it in timeline of 2014. So Tim's in line and he overhears the cashier at Lowe's, this young, talking to a customer in front of him about Chuck Berry's last show. And that she knows Chuck personally, and like somebody that's an assistant to Chuck Berry is in her family or something. And that Chuck's last show is coming up on like October 24th or whatever day it was like late October. And Tim and I, well, Tim comes home and he's like, drops everything. And he's like, we got to get Chuck Berry tickets right now. And I'm like, what? And he's like, we got to go, because we've never seen him before here at the Duck Room. And so I'm like, okay, well, let's do it. So we hurry up, and they went on sale and we bought him, because they sell out every time, obviously, because he's a legend. And we buy tickets. Well, that next week on the air, I said, I'm like, yeah, I'm really stoked. I got Chuck Berry tickets. Like, apparently, you know, this is going to be Chuck's last show. And of course, hearing, and I'm like, assumingly, and I tell this story about how this chick at Lowe's, like, my husband overhears it. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, and I tweet something out, because I, you know, part of being in the media is figuring things out. And when you hear people talk about something so, like, adamant like that, like, it's his last show,
right. You
want to get that out there. And I want to do my service to people. So I said something on Twitter or something like, oh, man, hearing rumors, it's Chuck Berry's last show, October 24th, whatever day it was. And Kevin C. Johnson from the Post-Dispatch follows me on Twitter, and he private messages me, and he's like, what's your source? And I'm like, this chick at Lowe's that works at Lowe's, my husband overheard it. And he's like, what the French is this, you know? So he just doesn't do anything with it. Well, anyway, still, because Kevin C. Johnson is a journalist, obviously, he gets a quote from Joe Edwards, and Joe Edwards comes out and says, you know, Chuck isn't going anywhere, everybody's cool. Well, anyway, we go to that show in the Duck Room, and I am like, I'm so excited. I mean, Chuck Berry's the dude who, like, invented rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like, he's the reason, right? And so we're at the show. I'm pretty much in tears, because I get very emotional. Like, anytime I see a band or an artist that you can just feel their essence and their significance to the music industry, I get very emotional. Here comes Chuck Berry out, and he's, like, the most adorable thing, and, you know, he and his son and his daughter, and everybody's out. The band is just so accommodating to him, and, like, it is so neat, and I still have, like, the intro on my phone of him walking out, and Joe Edwards did this outstanding, intro for him as he walked out, and he made sure to say, like, he's not going anywhere, and all this. Anyway, just from my personal experience, we left that night, and we didn't think that it was true, because everybody was kind of denying it. But I got to tell you, I don't think that there has been a Chuck Berry show since. Mm. And usually it's every month.
Yeah.
So for me, I am so appreciative of that woman at Lowe's.
Yeah.
And I also hope that it wasn't his last show. But I, talking to many people, you know, about, I think it was Jim who said, Jim Utz at Vintage Vinyl, he and I were talking about it. And I'm like, dude, I really hope that there's another show coming on the books, because that, it would be a damn shame if that was the last one.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a celebration of his legendary career. So,
yeah,
anyway.
You think he would, you know, at least like the pageant or something like that.
Yeah, like a bigger venue. Or maybe he wouldn't. You know, I mean, he was a trailblazer from the beginning.
Sure.
So maybe you just go out without a huge bang. Because so many people try to do that, and then it's like they, I don't know. People are so critical these days that it's like nobody appreciates it. But we appreciated that. If that is his last show, I can tell you this right now. Like, I have video of that night. I remember it in my heart. And you couldn't have had a better crowd as far as I'm concerned, of people watching such a legend up there who is well into his 80s, I think. And,
he's,
you know, he's trying his best still. So.
87 or 88 or something like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my Chuck Berry story. Since we're here at Blueberry Hill.
Sure. Yeah, I've got to see him live. I took my mother-in-law. I also got married last year, September 13th.
Ooh, congrats. You know what? Oh, no, it was August 13th. I was going to say that might be the day I got engaged. Yeah. Congratulations. Oh,
thank you. Yeah. So I took my mother-in-law to see Chuck, because she had never got to see him live. So it was a good experience. I also saw him before that with the buddies at Lindenwood. He does like a scholarship thing over there.
That's cool.
And a fundraiser show.
That's awesome.
So... yeah, I mean, like I said, it's something to just to be in the room there with him, you know,
honestly, a
living legend.
And here's the deal: everybody wants to be like, "Oh, I can't play." First of all, it's never embarrassing to see somebody of that age do anything. Like, my God, what a legacy! And my whole thing too is, there's so many people that piss me off. Just since we're on the topic, B.B. King passed away, right? Mm-hmm. I never saw B.B. King, and. I remember last time he was in town, people just ragging in a way that was like, are you for real? Like, you're in front of somebody who is so iconic, and just the fact that you're in their presence is good enough. Respect the presence. And for me, it's like, if you expect like an 80 plus year old person to do anything that a 20 year old can do, first of all, you're an idiot, because there's such an age difference there. And third, it's just like, you know, it kind of goes back to that, like, respect your elders type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't expect Chuck to get out there and duck walk and be like this crazy agile, like limber person doing backflips and stuff. I just, to see him in the flesh was the coolest thing.
Right.
And you appreciated that his band accommodates him so well. And to me, it was just a once in a lifetime experience. And I'll probably never see him again. And so I hold it so close to my heart.
And that's his son and daughter playing his band too.
Yeah. And they're so good to him.
Yeah.
It's so neat.
I when I was at the show here in the duck room, I got to talking to this couple, and I think it was like a Alaska or maybe Canada or something. And I know it was a good trip that they made to come to St. Louis to see Chuck Berry. So that's pretty crazy to think about. Like, I mean, I've traveled quite a ways for some shows, but go that far, you know, just to, but they that was the whole thing. All of them was kind of like a bucket list kind of thing to see Chuck Berry, and you know, and then you get a vacation out of here in St. Louis, and
not a bad town.
To think that people would travel that far to come to this show.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, you kind of see that's where I think we're kind of spoiled in the sense that we live here in this town, and
we
some people kind of take it for granted, and then you realize when you hear stories like that that people spent so much money to come to this town to see that.
Absolutely. It's a great thing to recognize and appreciate,
right?
For sure. I gotta say, this always surprises people, because first of all, I'm 30 years old, so my music demographics are just a 30-year-old, like, I'm 30, so that's just who I am. I'm trying to keep up with a 58-year-old every day at work, and it's hard. I'm constantly going backwards in my catalog of music instead of going forwards like people my age. People are always like, oh, did you hear the new Mumford & Sons? I'm like, no, because I'm over here listening to Robin Trower records trying to figure it out. But, you know, for me, my favorite band of all time, and people always are ragging on me, forever in time, I will travel, I will go, I've met him a million times, it's the Deftones. They're one of those bands that just, to me personally, it doesn't mean that they're the best band in the world. To me, though, they've gotten me through some pretty hard nights. Every album that they put out, they impress me even more. The fact that I've gotten to sit down with Chino Marino and talk to him a couple times is, like, the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I just ordered a White Pony Deftones bikini yesterday for $45 off their merch. I am literally like a fan, and my husband and I were traveling to Red Rocks to go see them in August, and I'm just like, I cannot even tell you how excited I am. So for me, they're my all-time favorite band, and you know, they're a band that I will travel far and wide. Like, Kansas City, I went to go see them by myself one night because I was like, I just gotta go.
Sure.
They weren't coming through St. Louis that tour. So but what about you? Like, who's your favorite band, like, that you explore, like, splurge on?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot, like, I don't know that there's like a really a big one like that that I'm super fan of.
Mm-hmm.
I love all sorts of music.
That's great.
I'm very very open minded to a lot of different styles.
That's
and
all
genres
I am too,
and
man.
Everything, but I did get to see Deftones once at Scott Trade with
Alice in Chains.
Alice in Chains and Mastodon.
It was such a great show.
Yeah, I was like 10 feet from the stage.
Me too. Yeah. We probably were like right next to each other on the floor.
Yeah,
I'm always the one like, I can't see because I'm so short. Like I'm like always like cursing the people in front of me.
Yeah, I'm probably the guy right in front of you that's 6'4".
You're probably the guy I was cursing at. I'm like, get this guy out of here. Let me up there.
Yeah, I do kind of feel bad sometimes like that, but I'm like, hey, I can't help it. I'm, you know.
My husband and I were, he'll hate me for saying this. I hope he doesn't listen. He's like 5'8", 5'7", maybe 5'7". So he's a little person too. Like I'm 5'3". He's little for a dude. He hates that, but I love it because I'm so small. Like
sure.
I've tried to date tall guys before. It just did not work out at all because nobody's got time for that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Tim.
Ain't
nobody got time for that. But yeah, Tim and I, we have many a problem going to shows, and we try to get, you know, near the front. Actually, you know what's, here's the deal. You've been married since September.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Okay. This is some real stuff that I'm getting ready to throw on you.
We're getting real now. Huh?
We're getting real. Like I'm getting closer to the microphone. I grew up, I'm from Illinois. I used to go to Pops. This is bad. I used to have like a fake ID. I used to go to Pops all the time before I should have been. My mom would have killed me if she knew. But I would be like in the pit. The chicks in the pit. And I know that we probably drive men crazy when we're in there, but that's who, like, my girlfriends and I were. Like, we were, like, crowd surfing and trying to mosh and all that stuff, right? We're, like, super little. And it was so cool. And I am, like, definitely a crowd, like, a floor crowd person when I go to shows.
Yeah.
That's where I feel the best.
Sure.
Because a couple of things happen. First of all, when you're down in the pit like that, you can't hear anything. And so people don't try talking to you the whole time because I cannot stand that. Secondly, you have like the prime spot of the show, and I really feel like the people that are in the pit are the ones who are the most able to connect to what is actually happening.
Oh, yeah.
And I cannot tell you. I mean, I'm very appreciative that we get on box lists and things for shows. I cannot stand being in the back, up top, talking to somebody that I don't want to freaking talk to. Like, I cannot stand that stuff. And my husband is the type of guy who, he doesn't need to be in the pit. Like, he just kind of keeps to himself, like, towards the back and stuff. And I'm like, let's go crowd surfing. You know, like, I still have it in my soul to, like, go down and, like, get crazy. But, you know, once you get married, you got to, like, compromise. It's all crazy. But,
Yeah,
anyway, I don't know why I threw that out there.
I'm definitely, definitely side with you on this because that's exactly, I'm always on the floor in the pageant. I'm always right up against the fence.
Right?
Because
then you can look up instead of out. I can't see anything from the back and near the bar. It drives me absolutely nuts.
Yeah, but Stacy, my wife, she's like your husband, where, you know, she's perfectly fine sitting in the back and
I get
and
it.
Relaxing.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just that my experiences of going to shows since I was 15, 16 years old is much more home.
Mm-hmm.
In the freaking thick of it,
where
people are sweating on you. This one time, I don't have the scar anymore, but I swear, I was in this pit. I don't remember what show it was. It was probably like a Guar show at Pops, which is great. Okay, if you've never gone to a Guar show, I know the lead guy's dead now, but go anyway. I'm sure they do just fine. I was in the pit. I was probably like 17, 18 years old, and people are crowd surfing. We're getting crazy. You're just soaked with terrible bodily fluids that they act like it is. And this guy just comes at me, and he had braces, and he comes and he just sliced his head. He was like smiling, so excited. He just goes right by my face, and his braces take out like a chunk of my cheek. And we both like saw each other afterwards, and I was like, dude, like I was bleeding, and just it was awful. And he, there's people in here eating. Like, a ball of skin, like my cheek skin, on his in his braces. It was the most disgusting thing ever. But that's a rock show, right? Yeah. Like, that's a gore show. Yeah. And so it's things like
it's
that.
So
like,
metal.
It's so metal. Like, you don't have those memories in the back. You have them when you're in the stupid pit and you're pissed off and people are driving you absolutely nuts. And you're able to take that anger out in a way that is, you know, not terrible. Sure. So it's awesome.
I do feel, I'm like I said, I do get in the, I'm usually the one like right outside the pit shoving everybody back in because I'm.
Because you're the big guy.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, I don't want to break my glasses or or something, you know, any of that stuff. Like, now that's the 30-year-old thinking, like, you know, where I'm like, you know how expensive those are? And, you know, that kind of stuff.
Dude, I don't have glasses yet. I would be breaking them though. I'm going to have to, I think my next concert that I go to is, I'm going to have to just drag them down there and be like, look. This is how it's gonna be.
I went to not as much this year, but in past years at Point Fest, that you know some of the crowds get a little crazy with the crowd surfing and everything else. And
oh my gosh, the best.
And now as like I said, I'm getting older. It's like the crowds start to bother me sometimes. Like I just the crowd surfing thing. I don't like. I'm sitting here looking forward at the show, and then all of a sudden, like, now your safety is my responsibility. I got to hold you up, and you kick me in the back of the head and everything else. And
yeah, see, I'm just so, I am that person on top of the crowd. Right. Like, some of my favorite memories of high school were all those early Point Fests were like, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Hole, all those different bands were there. And when Our Lady Peace, I'll never forget Point Fest. This is when they used to have the tarps on the lawn, right? Mm-hmm. And when it would rain, because it obviously would, because it seemed like it rained every Point Fest, which is so stupid. I remember the crowds would part like Moses, you know, and we would make a giant slip and slide. Yeah. And you would be disgusting, and you would be, like just soaked and muddy, and people would be throwing you. And like, I remember Our Lady Peace was on, it was 2 years in a row, I think, and it was just pouring. And you did not care. And it was just the coolest. Now you go to Point Fest, and everybody's got to look their hottest and, you know, da-da-da. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That drives me insane. That any form of that drives me nuts. Don't wear heels at shows.
I had kind of that moment where, and I've talked about it on here with, but it was at Mayhem Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, just massive torrential downpour, and I'm like right at the edge in the seats, like where the awning, the and so I'm just, you know, I'm soaked too, and Jonathan Davis from Korn comes out and does his bagpipe solo.
Oh my god!
And I'm like,
the best.
It was just awesome that, you know, why he's playing bagpipes and we're all out here just soaking wet in the rain and the mud and everything. It was pretty incredible experience.
Yeah. Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah.
How neat is it? I forgot that he played bagpipes. I've heard it enough on Korn records.
Sure.
But yeah, he's a trip.
Yeah. It was something special that night. It was really cool. And then, like, you know, going home, like, the car is like all steamy and stuff.
Yeah, right.
We're all soaking wet. And
it smells awful. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But no, it was crazy though. But yeah, I don't know. I think we started with that with like different bands that I would travel to see.
Oh yeah, we got an entire tangent of whatever the hell that just was.
It's fun. That's the beauty of podcasting. Yeah, it's just wherever it goes.
Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah. I did go recently to Kansas City to see J.J. Gray and Mofro.
Okay, you're the second person this week that's been talking to me about J.J. Gray and Mofro, and I have not looked into them yet.
Oh,
tell me more.
You should do that. They're like, I don't know, old like soul funk kind of. They got there's a lot of different kind of stuff. I think like if you would just listen to the instrumental of it's almost like a Temptations record.
Ooh.
Like there's a lot of that. JJ doesn't, you know, obviously he's not doing the same harmonies and stuff that the Temptations did and all that, but there's elements of it, I think, you know, that kind of old soul like that. But he He's an incredibly entertaining performer himself, and the band is like super tight. Like they just
that's great.
They sounded fantastic. We were it was at Knuckleheads in Kansas City where we saw.
I've never been there.
It's a great place too.
Is it like a venue or is it a bar? What is
yeah, it's sort of a so there's a lot of different things going on there. It's the first time I was up there was to see Will Hogue. He's a singer-songwriter, lives in Nashville. I first met him opening for Shinedown on their acoustic tour at the Pageant.
Oh, yeah.
And he opened that tour. And so I went up there to see him there, and it was on the inside room. And just walking around there, like it's like a sort of roadhouse kind of vibe, you know? Like a little rundown, a little kind of grungy, but it's a really nice place. And then outside... Where JJ was at, they have a stage, because it's summertime now. They're using it, and it's almost like a Fast Eddie's kind of vibe to it, like
that's
just
awesome.
just a big party patio kind of thing. And then they also have this other room. It's like their third stage on the same, all in the same spot. It's like a garage they took over, and they put a stage in there. And so I've never seen a show.
Knuckleheads.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check that out next time.
It's and then so for me, like, I live out in Wentzville area, and so like there's a lot of times I'll run up to Columbia, or you know Kansas City is a little farther, but if it's a good show, it's only 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know. But sometimes I look at the venues like, I love the Pageant, but. Like something like Knuckleheads, like that, where you're outside and, mm-hmm. and it's still an intimate
That's
thing.
That's so neat.
Yeah. So I wish we had more. I know, like, there's the Chesterfield Amphitheater out there, and they're doing mm-hmm. a little bit, but.
Alton Amphitheater as well.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of bands like. Well, and then Jefferson Barracks, like JV
sure.
Park,
yeah.
is another great one. You don't really see a lot of bands try to book those, and it is so neat to see in an intimate. It's still intimate, but it's like
yeah.
outside. That element of just wilderness is really cool.
Yeah. Well, you touched, you said Red Rocks earlier, and that's the one that's a bucket list thing for me.
Me too.
So
I'm excited to check that off here in a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to go.
Yeah, well, I probably won't make it just for funding reasons, they have a show, it's Michael Franti and
mm-hmm.
Spearhead.
Oh my gosh.
And J.J. Gray and Mofro together up there, and I was like, that would just blow my mind seeing those two together because
Michael Franti is so great.
Yeah.
I saw him open up for Carlos Santana mm-hmm. at the Fox a couple years back, and wow, like he's one of those guys who gets in the like he literally
oh, yeah.
came out into the crowd and is like playing with people and like Tim and I, not being very affluent in Michael Franti before seeing that, we kind of got to the show a bit late and walked into this like. Amazing hysteria that he was creating himself, and just people were up and dancing. It's the Fox, so it's pretty stiff over there.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just so impressed by him. He seems like a really good guy, like really happy, and his music is nice.
Yeah.
And he's great.
Yeah. Well, two stories just came to mind. So I was at Fox, maybe a week ago, whatever it was, for Alabama Shakes.
Yeah.
And there's this guy behind me. Most of us are sitting down because one, they were playing some softer kind of stuff,
sure.
and they're nice seats, so we're all enjoying the seats while we can.
Yeah.
And then there's this guy. Like every time they'd end the song, everybody's cheering and standing up and things, and then like this guy behind me starts yelling, like, "Stand up, St. Louis, stand up!" You know, like he's trying to get it. Like he thinks, or like everybody's being rude by sitting, that they should be on their feet
yeah.
and dancing and all this stuff. And he keeps like, and then like, literally for half an hour, all I hear is this guy like, "I've been to shows all over the world. I've been, you know, all the stuff."
He's
and
like talking.
Yeah.
He sings
and
all.
I'm like, "Why don't you shut up, man? I'm trying to watch this show."
Right.
It's like, and
I do agree with him though. And if I could just touch on the fact that I have had to leave shows because people are pissed that I'm standing up
mm-hmm.
and I don't mean to mean, I don't like to be mean to people, but I, you know, when I'm in a show and it's a show that I'm passionate for, I'm up.
Sure.
I'm up dancing. I'm, you know, I hate seats in that situation. Yeah. That's why the pageant's so great, because you can go anywhere you need to.
That was what I was thinking, though, is like, if they wanted everybody up on their feet, they wouldn't have been playing slower songs.
Sure.
And they wouldn't have been playing The Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they knew they were playing a nice theater.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. But it's, if it's a rock and roll kind of show, like, it probably...
Get an amphitheater or get like a... Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Like
somewhere where people can get up and dance.
A bit more raw venue.
Yeah. There was a woman next to me, and she was kind of probably like yourself, standing alone in the middle, you know, everybody else kind of sitting around her. And Usher comes over and says, could you sit down? People can't see behind you. And
okay.
And then, like...
I got a great story for you. I'm pretty much that woman. go on. What did that woman do? Like, did she sit down?
Oh, she just... she obliged and she just sat that down. But it was, like... But it was kind of that thing where all, like, real... Like, it was just kind of funny that everybody's like, really? Like, somebody's complaining. And,
right? Here's my story about obliging and sitting down and people being a-holes. It's literally the title of the story. So El Monstero last year at the pageant, right? They play like 7 consecutive nights or whatever it is, crazy.
Yeah.
And I've been going since 2008, and we're blessed to be affiliated with them, to get free tickets to go and all that. And
right.
So I'm very thankful for that. And I also understand people that pay for tickets and support the band, and I want that to keep happening. So in no way am I walking into El Monstero thinking, oh, I'm the shit and, you know, F everybody. Like, I'm walking in being appreciative of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am 5'3", and Tim and I were in our usual back area because that's where he likes to be. And we have my best friends Rob and Chelsea with me, and we also have our friend Nick and one of his pals with us. So we're rolling like 6 deep, okay? Like, it's a pretty big group for the pageant. Anyway, El Monstero plays their first set and then mission after the wall. And as they intermission, people go to the Halo Bar, or they go home, or they are drunk and they get a cab. Anyway, it opens up a lot of areas. And so I said, okay, you know, let's kind of sneak in for the second half and stand in the general admission, because it's general admission, which means that there's no assigned seats.
Sure.
And you're kind of SOL if somebody's standing, you just kind of got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are accommodating to whomever we're sitting by, da da da. Well, we pick up 2 more people. So now we're rolling 8 deep in our group. So it's a lot of people, but we're conscious of, like, we're good concert goers. Like, I... done enough of this to know who's an a-hole and who's not. I'm making sure I'm clearing a walkway. I'm being accommodating to the pageant staff. I'm also accommodating to people who are around me. I'm never in anybody's way. I'm like the last person in anybody's way because I'm so small. Anyway, we're sitting there watching. I'm just like mesmerized over Dark Side of the Moon. It's the second half. Mark Quinn is my favorite. I'm just like falling in love with the music again. It's the only time we saw El Monstero in the last year because I couldn't go to the summer show, and this is the first winter show I went to. I'm just mesmerized. I'm in love with it. I'm having a great time. I'm feeling like my people that are around me. I'm like, oh my God, like Pink Floyd music is so amazing. We're kind of drunk, obviously. And all of a sudden, one of the wonderful people at the pageant comes up and says, hey guys, it's actually a young guy. And he's like, hate to do this. He probably, I think he knew who I was too. Not that that matters to this. He's like, I'm really sorry to do this, but this lady behind you is losing it. And you guys, can you move or do something different? And I turn around and I see her, and she's like this middle-aged lady who is just sass to the extreme. Like, has no accommodating factor about her whatsoever. She's like, just like, move out of the way, bitch. Like, that's pretty much like what she's saying with her face, right? She's got resting bitch face. Anyway, and I'm like, and I look at the guy and I said, look, in all fairness, this is a general admission area. She can see the stage because we were probably 10 feet away from her. So we were not directly in front of her. I'm like, she can stand or she can move. She was in a position where she was not, it was not a handicapped area or anything like that, because I obviously would have definitely moved if that was the case. But she was just drinking and having a good time, and I felt that, but she was such an a-hole. And so I'm like, we're not going anywhere. This is general admission. There's other people around us standing. We're standing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Guy leaves. He's like, I totally get it. You know, he like summons away. Anyway, she gets another guy who's like more of a veteran dude who's worked there forever And he comes up, and this time he's got a security guard. And it was just so over the top. Anyway, it's like ruining my vibe too. So I'm like explaining, I'm like, dude, it's general admission. Like, there's tons of people standing, and there's tons of people sitting. You just deal with it. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But then I start, like, I'm such an empath that I'm like, okay, now I'm feeling guilty because, like, I'm here on my station's dime.
Yeah.
It's not, I didn't pay for tickets. She obviously probably paid for tickets. And so I start feeling bad, and I'm like, okay, I totally get it. So I'm trying to, like, figure out how I could maneuver. Well, my husband, who, God love him, he loves music as much as I do. He loves me to death. He's not having it at all. Then I turn around, and I see this woman. She flips me off. And I'm just like, what the hell, man? First of all, you don't flip off random people I don't know if you knew this or not. The pageant sells the most alcohol ever of any show that they've ever done on El Monstero nights.
Oh, yeah?
The bar bill that is racked up, how much... Oh, it's insane, because it's a drinking crowd, and it's a freaking, like, good time crowd. And so, first of all, I knew that information. This lady probably didn't know. But I'm like, I'm not flipping anybody off, and I'm not getting on anybody's bad side, because drunk people are ruthless. You know? Anyway, she got off lucky, because I was just like, you know what? I'm pissed. I got pissed, because I was like, I don't have to take this. This lady's being a total douchebag. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm 5'3". We're all, like, small people in our group. Anyway, Tim sits there and argues with the security guard for a little while. They weren't letting down, which, God love them. The pageant trains some amazing people to be good to us. But I was so mad, and I ended up leaving. And as I was leaving, a bunch of people I knew from the pageant were like, where are you going? Like, you know, come on back. You know, like, trying to accommodate us. And I'm just like, I'm so mad. This lady's so mean, and I just wanted to see the second half, and da-da-da-da. And you know what? She probably got it on the other end of karma, so whatever. But, people that stand up at shows, it's not that bad. Like,
sure. You
know, I know that there's a time and place, but it's like everybody gets their due. Everybody who enjoys music and goes to see the show should be able to actually see the show. And I'm sure she saw the first half, and I just wanted to see the second, and I felt so bad. And anyway, I told Mark Quinn at a later date, I'm like, dude, I had to end up leaving because I couldn't, this lady was such a bitch, and I'm like, I just can't deal with her. And he was like, oh my God, never again. He felt so, you know, he was like, I hate that you didn't get to see the show. So anyway, yeah, stand up at shows. It's a rock show. You paid good money. Get your money's worth. I don't know. Unless you have a debilitating, you know, like, you can't stand, and I understand that. But
Do some dancing. It's good for you.
Dance, yes.
Yeah, he's another one. I gotta reach out to Mark. I gotta get him on the show.
Oh my gosh, he's such an interesting person. And Kevin Gagnepaine too. Yeah. All of those guys, Jake, everybody is just cool.
I've had Jake, Bill,
John,
and Jimmy.
Oh yeah.
And got a couple of guys I'm working on, but yeah. I've reached out to Kevin. He's super busy guy though.
He is super busy. He pretty much is the he's like the which I am saying this from my own perspective. I'm like, he's like the accountant. Like, he's the business guy behind it, I believe, and takes care of a lot. Yeah. So I'm sure he is really busy.
Like, he's like a stage production and stuff. Like,
yeah,
does all the,
he's got the production company that puts it on. And I don't know too much about the odds and ends of all of their business. I know those guys personally, but we never really talk business when we're around.
Sure.
Like, I got to be in El Monstero for a couple of years, which was really neat.
Yeah.
Katie Cruz used to be the groupie on the song One of My Turns, and it's right after Young Lust, and everybody always loves that. And so I remember in 2008, whenever I started working at Keishi, I went to my first El Monstero show, because we obviously were, like, working it, and I always loved Pink Floyd music, but I had never seen a live production locally produced like this. And so when I saw it, I'm like, literally, I went all 5 nights consecutively because I was working, and I was just like jaw dropped to the floor. And when Katie Cruz would walk out and do her, they call it like the head groupie, I'm like, that is so badass. It's so sexy, and it's so, like, cool. And I was like, oh God, like, I wanted her to be that someday. And so, just how I am, I'm like, I'll do anything for El Monstero. Like, I'll mop the backstage area. Like, just let me back there. I want to be a part of this. And so, luckily, my friend Carol Ivich, I met her, and she was in charge of, like, running the whole backstage area. She's this little Croatian, like, beautiful woman, and she's smaller than I am, and, like, she's so much power. And so, I met her, and she and I connected, and I said, next year, if you need anything, like, I'm down. And so the next year, she called me, and she's like, we actually need somebody to be a kid during, you know, another brick in the wall, like, to march and dress in a school outfit. And I'm like, I'm do it, you know? So I put my hair in pigtails and freckles, and Lux actually did this with me, too. And I found some crazy, like, schoolgirl offer from Goodwill, and we'd, like, just show up, and we have no idea what we're doing. But right. Carol directed us, and we did it, and it was so awesome. And then I said, I loved what happened tonight. Like, I hadn't been on stage. I've never been in a band or anything. And it was, like, the coolest thing ever to be on a sold-out pageant show stage with this great music and, like, just doing whatever. And anyway, from that, it perspired to, like, being into Young Lust and being all sexily dolled up and dancing all provocatively. I'm sure my husband really appreciated those years. But anyway, I did that. And then Katie ended up finally, like, retiring from the show. And they asked if I would want to read the lines for that song, because there's, like, a speaking part. And I practiced. You don't even understand, like, how much I would just spin the same part of that song over and over and over and try and nail the lady's tones and all the things that she did. Right. And I did that for a couple of years, and it was the coolest thing ever. And then in 2012, that was my last year doing it. And I was like, I'm retiring. I'm, you know, I can only do it. I wanted to pass it on to somebody else because it was such a neat thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't know. But I can't remember. I guess it was maybe last year's, 2 years maybe. I don't know, whatever it was. But it was my first time seeing El Monstro. I was one of those things, like, you obviously being in St. Louis, you hear about it. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's like, you know, I kept hearing it's such a great show. And but the tribute band thing always messed me up, like, because I've seen some really terrible tribute bands. And, like, so that was always in the back of my mind, was, like, those experiences.
Sure.
And it's like, so I never really, like, rushed out to go see them, even though I heard.
I get that.
And and finally, I guess Pageant does those, like, vouchers every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, or no, that was the second time I saw them. So the first time, we bought tickets. So anyway, but I ended up taking my mother-in-law the last time. It was her first time seeing them. So I saw them the winter before. Mm-hmm. And last year we went together. And because
you had a pretty cool mother-in-law, it sounds like. Yeah, because you take her to the Stones,
Oh, yeah, it was Chuck Berry.
Oh, Chuck Berry, yeah.
But no, we've seen Devin Allman a bunch of times together. We both like the blues kind of stuff a lot.
Nice.
But no, she likes going to rock shows, and so yeah, she tags along sometimes, and we have a good time.
Devin Allman just signed on. We're going to do a local produce section episode on him coming up in August.
All right, great.
So that'll be cool once that comes out.
But I took her to see El Monstero, and it blew her mind too. Like, it was such a.
It is so neat.
It was the night Connor Lau joined him on stage for for money.
I know Connor.
Yeah, he's been on the show too.
What a cool that kid's like, what, 15?
Yeah, 15 now.
He's I met him at the School of Rock. His mom is just the cutest little lady, and she came up to me because I was doing, I think it was broadcasting, and this is when the School of Rock was in Kirkwood still, and she came up to me and was explaining her son and said all this and that, and she's like, you need to see him do, like, Cliffs of Dover and, like, all these videos, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll check it out. And so many times when people tell me to check out their kids or, you know, look into something, it's not as impressive, but then, which is, I'm not trying to be mean, but it's just, parents are a lot more proud of their kids than strangers are, so it's like, you know, I guess it's just everybody's thing. Anyway, Connor Lau, like, I looked up his videos, and I'm like, holy crap, like, this kid is going to be known. He's just like a Monica Valli, if you know her. She just started college, I think a year or two ago. First of all, she's, like, stunning. She's been on stage with El Monstero as well. She's this bright blonde, kind of Orianthe type, just a wailer on guitar. She's the whole freaking package, just like Connor is. She's a bit older, so she she just went on this crazy European tour. I follow her on Instagram, and she's been everywhere, it seems. But she goes to college, I think in Boston. And what's great, though, is El Monstero isn't afraid of, like, breaking kids out and being like, hey, we all know that we're, like, in our 40s or whatever, and we can play our instruments, obviously, but check out this 15-year-old guy who's locally here and is going to probably be famous if he ever gets his big break. And I look at Connor, and I'm like, dude, like, hands to the sky, like, if he plays his cards right, he's the next Eric Johnson. He's the next, you know, Slash. He has that in him to be epic if he really wants to pursue that.
Yeah, that party over at Steve's, he was a part of it.
That's so cool.
So I invited him and Race sang with him. I don't know if you met her, but she's also in the School of Rock, and both are incredibly talented individuals. And yeah, it's just exciting to be a part of their lives in this moment now, to watching them grow and hoping that you know, they find where they fit in and really, you know, hone their craft. But they and you know, for what I've always said a bunch of times too, is Connor's one of the nicest kids too. Like, yes. You know, it makes you root for him so much more when you're such a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's just a kid. He's normal. Yeah. He's not he could have an ego about him, you know, like if he really wanted. I don't know how he is personally. Like, I think about my high school career and like what that's like for kids these days. And I hope that kids that Connor goes to school with understand how neat of a kid he is. You know, I look at it, I'm like, dude, you're the type of kid that, like, when I was 15, I'd be like, I'm taking you to prom. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's so cool. He's the best.
And I've seen him perform with the School of Rock band.
Yeah.
They opened up a Funky Butt Brass Band show once at Old Rock House. And, you know, you would kind of think, like, Connor might be, like, the stand-up or star or what. But he builds up everybody around him. Like, he's, you know, the biggest supporter of all of his friends and his band.
And that's what makes him great.
Yeah. So he's, you know, when he wasn't playing, like, they did, like, this kind of, like, line change kind of thing, like, where this line came up and played a song, and then the next group would, so there's always constant switching of members of the band. And, and you know, when he wasn't playing, he's down there, you know, rooting them on and, you know, cheering and stuff. And
that's great.
So it was really cool to see that, like, you know, that it's, you know, he's part of this, like, with his friends, and he's having a good time just like any other 15-year-old kid. Like I said, his mother Amber is a really sweet lady too. Like, so it's, like I said, it's fun to meet good people like that when you're out doing this bit in this business here.
Yeah, it's rare too. There's not a lot of, I mean, music industry is a cool industry to be in, but man, it's such a hard industry right now too. Like, bands aren't getting their due, you know what I'm saying? In some way or another, there's like, they're either not getting paid enough, or they're not getting their break, or their fan base is all messed up. Like, it's a very complicated industry to be in, and there's so much ego involved in it because it's so personal. Music is, we were talking off the podcast earlier, like, about how it's hard to be in the music industry and tell people what you think. It's almost impossible because there's always going to be somebody who disagrees with you, and you're going to ruin it for somebody. And part of my job in radio is I have to be honest with people, but at the same time, it's like, I don't want to tell people what sucks and what's good, just like you don't. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to find good people in the music industry. Everybody's out for themselves, it seems like, or they're out for something bigger. And I don't know. Yeah. It's just nice that there's kids growing up that aren't as tainted as they could have been.
Oh yeah. So what got you into broadcasting, though?
Funny story.
Yeah.
So, I graduated high school in 03, and then I've always loved talking. I can talk to anybody. It's kind of a curse. And I'm old school about it. I like talking face-to-face or on the phone.
Yeah.
My friends hate me because I call them all the time. But, I got into it because, well, first I didn't know that I wanted to do radio. And it's actually a neat story. Just really fast in a nutshell. I graduated from high school, and I went to Southwestern Illinois College over in Belleville at SWIC, and I was taking my general eds to get those out of the way because I was a really, really bad high school student, like C student. I only did well in English, art, and speech. That's like it. And I was, you know, I didn't want to be in school to learn. I wanted to have fun. So anyway, I got out, and I went to junior college to get my general eds out of the way, and as I was in there, I always had like a knack for journalism and writing and things. So I took a journalism class, and it was like this god awful, I don't even remember the woman's name, thankfully, she's thankful. It was this newspaper journalism class, and I'm thinking, okay, I was in yearbook journalism, I'm gonna love it, da da da. We wrote obituaries the whole time, and I was so bored. It was just not very good. But anyway, I had a great speech teacher at SWIC, had great art teachers, I had wonderful math teachers. SWIC just really opened up my brain. And so anyway, I took a bunch of psychology classes too, because I'd always had interest in forensic psychology, and I thought, okay, I want to go out and help the police forces and be like an FBI agent, and I want to be able to like outsmart serial killers and figure them out. And I've always been interested in people's minds and how they think, and I'm an overthinker, so I constantly thought that I'd be good at that. And I did really well in all my psychology classes. Well, 2 years at SWCC, I finally was going to transfer, and I looked at a bunch of different Illinois colleges and decided on Illinois State. And before we went to actually like see all the schools that I liked, because there was like Northern Illinois and U of I and different things, I was dating this dude. So dumb. And so he and I went to Indiana to see his mom. That's where his mom lived. And we were in a Best Buy parking lot in Indianapolis. I think it was Indy. And I just bought the No Doubt box set that just came out. It's a really big deal to me because I love Gwen Stefani more than most women. And we're in the parking lot. And this guy who I was dating was kind of a deadbeat. Like, he didn't really... We both graduated at the same time. And he was really cute and, like, a metalhead. And we both loved punk rock and stuff. And that's how we connected and whatever. But he really didn't apply himself after he graduated high school. He never went to college, I don't think. I honestly, like, we broke up after this, what I'm getting ready to tell you. I don't know what he's up to these days, but, and he's not an idiot or anything. He's just like we weren't compatible anymore. Anyway, we're in the Best Buy parking lot. I'm looking at my No Doubt box set. It came with like a booklet, and I'm losing it over Tony Kanaal and all these people. And so, this dude's mom and him are having a conversation in the front of the car, and I'm in the back. And she's like, da 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 da, enter name here. Why don't you go into this for school? And she's pretty much a mom trying to push her son to like go to college on some level. And he's resisting and all this. And then she goes, well, why don't you go to school for radio? You've always loved music and you were good at talking to people and blah, blah, blah. She's like the sweetest. And literally like light bulbs came on in my head. And I'm like, I literally looked up from the box set and I'm like, I need to go into radio. I'm like, what? And so that was, after that, we broke up. Like, he cheated on me. It was this whole mess. We broke up, and I realized that through that madness, the whole reason we dated in the first place was because I needed to get to that Best Buy parking lot to find out what I was going to do with my life.
Yeah.
So I came home, and my mom, who had thought, okay, my daughter's going to go to school for forensic psychology and hopefully make a living, I came home, and I'm like, Mom, I'm going into radio. And her dreams shattered. She was like, you're not going to have a job. You know, like all the fear of a mom went into her life. Well, anyway, we went up to visit Illinois State and I'm like, I'm going the mass communications route. This is what I'm doing. And it was seriously such a cool, clear path. It was so weird. And Illinois State had the best radio program, this radio station that was all college run. It wasn't like your normal like indie band college radio station. It was literally modeled off after a commercial radio station with directors and auditions and voice tracks and like everything. WZND is what it's called. And at that time, it was just a streaming online radio station. The airwaves were owned by this other crappy jazz station on the campus that I will forever hate because they stole our damn airwaves. They have them now on their own, WZND does, but at the time when I was in college, they didn't have airwaves and it was really unnerving. Anyway, so I went to Illinois State, and it was the first time ever in my life that I did really well in school, and I aced it. I mean, and people were like, you've never done radio before? You have this natural ability and stuff, and I'm like, I'm just being myself, you know? And, like, it was so neat to just do it and be good at something finally, yeah. And I got all sorts of accolades from that, and I got to do so many cool things in college, and from there, it literally launched my ambitions, and I still keep in touch with a lot of my friends from there, and we were a radio group. It was not, I felt like I went to school at WZND. I didn't go to school at Illinois State, and that was what the whole program was supposed to be like. And so when I graduated in 07, because I graduated December in 2007, I moved home to St. Louis, and I moved back here, and I, you know, hit the ground running. I was a barista for a little while at this really great coffee shop in my hometown, and so that got me used to waking up at 4 a.m. because I was making people coffee and entertaining them at 5 or whatever. Yeah. And then I was trying to get my resume out to anyone that would take it and my demos out to anyone. Well, what's funny is, and it's kind of ironic, I couldn't get a damn job anywhere. Nobody was accepting me for even a board hopping position because everybody's a jerk. And and so I was literally down on my luck. I was ready to just, like, I was so devastated. And my mom and I, like, worked at this job called American Recreation Products. And I would work there full-time in the summer. And my mom's like, why don't you talk to her boss at the time, Brent? And she's like, see if he knows a lot of people. Maybe he knows somebody in the radio industry. And I'm like, okay. Well, anyway, he says, yeah, my daughter plays soccer with John Hewlett's daughter. And I'm like, great. Go talk to him for me. You know, and so Brent is the sweetest, and I owe him everything. He goes and gets John's email address and then emails it to me and is like, good luck, kid. You know, you're on your own. I write John, my co-host now, on Keishi, the most professional email that's ever been arranged. And I'm like, this is who I am. This is what I've done. Da, da, da. It's like total crazy. My resume, my demo, da, da, da. John's like, and John, here's the deal about John. I work with him 4 hours a day every day for 3 years in a soundproof box. John is bad at emails. And he won't eat. I say this, he's not the most technologically advanced person. Right. So the fact that he even got the email is amazing. The fact that he replied back was spectacular. And then the fact that he forwarded me on to Tony Boozy Cruz, who at the time was the marketing director for KG, was like the best. Anyway, fast forward, I interview, I tell Tony Boozy Cruz, I said, look, I'm just willing to work for free. Just, I need to get a real life experience here in St. Louis. And I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. They oblige. I work for free for 12 weeks for Keishi as an intern, even though I didn't need any internship credits. And the recession of 08 hit in that time. And it literally, my life is all based on luck. So I was lucky enough to be in a position with the knowledge I had from school at Keishi to where when people were getting fired left and right, because it was a really bad time for media, I literally was like, I'll do whatever you guys need. Like, I know this much about radio. I can help in these ways. And they were like, yes. And they put me to work, paid me a part-time salary. And I was in the promotions department for, you know, a year part-time. And then I ended up, I was still being here, by the way. Yeah. I would get up at 4 a.m., be a barista, go to Keishi at noon, be there till 5, work events. I ended up getting a third job at the old Rock House as a promotions manager there for a year through my networking. And then finally I got on full-time in the promotion staff at Keishi and always had dropped hints that my bread and butter as far as my life is concerned was on air, and that I am good at promotions because I'm quirky and nice to people, but at the same time I wanted to be on air because I had a voice. And so Rick Bayless, luckily when the time was right in 2012, he said, we're going to take Bob and Tom off the air. We're going to throw you and John together, see what happens. And it was my big break. So
very cool.
It was, it's kind of a weird story. And there's a lot of people that unfortunately, like, who helped me get to where I am now that don't work with me anymore for one reason or the other. And it's, I'm so thankful for those people. I always make sure to like Tony Boozy Cruz, Katie Cruz, Radio Rich, all these people like helped me in so many ways, and I love them all so much for that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Boozy Cruz, huh?
Boozy Cruz,
that's
yeah.
What a great name.
I know, right? Tony is now working. He's like one of the big managers over at Alumni. It's a restaurant in St. Louis downtown, and it's a great restaurant. And Tony's always loved food, and so he's in his element. But he's such good people, and like he's so smart, and he's big. We both are idealists, and he worked for Keishi for 16 years, I believe it was. And a lot of the heart and soul, I believe, that Keishi has had in those time frame that he was there was all because of Tony. He was just like totally in it. And, you know, he's my favorite boss of all time. I always say it. He was just so much fun to work with. We literally sat 3 feet from each other daily in the small little office. And, that dude helped me through like talking about everything and, just help. He always was the supporting system for me. So it's, and I see him from time to time now, but it's definitely not as much as I wish.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but stuff like that, like it's kind of, it's crazy to think, you know, that you have this epiphany or whatever one day where it's like, this is it. I got to do this. And I guess I kind of had that with this, with doing, push me to do this show, but it's like, I really don't know where I'm going to take this. I don't know if I want to.
That's good though.
I love this aspect of it, just in this format. I don't know if it would be, if the show would have the same character if I try to put it into a studio and put it on the radio, or you know, that kind of, I don't know. Thanks.
Podcasting is like, there's good and there's evil to it, because I've been thinking about doing so much of our industry's branding, right? So like, I'm still coming up in KG. I mean, I still have at least 30 years to really put myself on the map, but to brand yourself, you have to have something. And so I've been looking into doing an after air podcast where, it's, I don't know if it'd be like this, but it would just be me with whatever. And I haven't really decided if I want to do that or if I should, or, you know, what that will do. But I think podcasting is cool as hell. And I think that it's neat because it doesn't have to be anything.
Sure.
It's a very organic media that, has a lot of potential if you get something successful, you know?
Yeah. So. I saw Kevin Smith, the filmmaker, mm-hmm. at the pageant for a Q&A kind of thing.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And he does a podcast with his friends called Smobcast, and it's just him and some buddies. And whenever people were asking him questions, a lot of them had to relate with podcasting, and a lot of them, you know, people are like, yeah, you know, you inspired me to start a podcast. And, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff. And he went on and he said something, and then it's really kind of just stuck with me now because it's kind of changed how I view this whole thing. But he was talking about, like, he had his mother on his show and, you know, things like, the fan of conversation. And he's like, and how he wants to talk to his buddies and his parents,
yeah.
and things like that. And just to have these things. And because he says, you know, one of the first things to go when your memory is the sound of somebody's voice.
Yes.
And he has all these recordings of him and his mother and stuff like that. And like, and it's just really like opened my eyes to that, like where I want to do more stuff with my friends and more with my
Absolutely.
Parents and things. And then, you know, and then, like, I always think, too, like, you know, heaven forbid something happens, but there's all these recordings that I could have for either myself or, you know, whoever. Like, if, you know, if I
pass
children
away.
Someday or
sure.
whatever, they can all come. Like, at least somebody has I have all this documentation of my life over the last year or whatever it is, and, you know, things like this. So
I gotta say, I agree with him 100%. My dad passed away in 2006, and I was still in college at the time. It was my senior year I was going into. He died in July of 2006. And so that following fall, I had this great creative writing class. It was my last semester in school. And I did an entire project on genetics. It was creative writing class, but I was also in a genetics class. And my dad just had passed away. And my grandma, who was entitled to his estate and everything, didn't... kill his phone his cell phone still had his voicemail active, and I would probably call his voicemail every night
yeah.
before I went to sleep and just listen to his voicemail. And it was so ironic because it would say, hey, you've reached Greg, I'm not around right now, give me a call back later or whatever. And I would always laugh because I'm like, yeah, you're not around, you're dead, you know, like yeah. this is so stupid. And but I would listen to that all the time, and I kept listening to it, and I'm like, I have to record this. And so I did. I ended up, like, because I had all this audio equipment in my dorm room, and I'm like, I recorded it and I put it in part of this genetics. It was like a semester-long journal entry, mm-hmm. poetry, weird class, creative writing, and it was all, it led up to it. And I actually put like audio to the ending project and all this. And it is so important to have a voice of someone you
sure.
love. It is so important. So Kevin Smith's like right on the money about that.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like I said, it really hit home for me, and that's what he was saying. Like, he, you know, people were saying how they have podcasts, and he's like, great, you know, he's like, do it, go, you know, take the opportunity. There's nobody saying you can't.
Yeah.
You know? And it's easy to do for the most part. You know,
it's free.
Yeah. And he's like, go out and do it while you can, because eventually somebody's going to try to, you know, change it to where you got to pay for all
mm-hmm.
of it or whatever it is. And you know, so that's
good for you
yeah.
for going to that. That's
oh
cool.
yeah. No, it was my buddy Jim bought tickets, and he's a huge fan of Kevin. And I love his movies. I personally don't listen to his podcast. I got a couple others I listen to, and it's hard to find time for it all, but,
yeah.
but it, after hearing that, I would love to go back and listen to some stuff.
Smoochy Poos or whatever he and Jay always talked about.
Yes, oh, yes, Smoochy Boochies.
Yeah.
That's what's kind of crazy is like he wrote this movie. I just watched it the other day after all this kind of happened. It's a movie called Tusk.
Mm-hmm.
And have you seen it at all?
Mm-mm. I just know the Fleetwood Mac version of Tusk.
It's very, very messed up.
Yeah? I'll have to check it out. Netflix?
Yeah, it's on...
all right.
Actually, I don't know if it was on... anyway, I rented it, but it was like... The premise of the movie, and they it's all in the credits, like, but it started on the podcast. He was talking to his buddies, and then, like, the idea of this crazy movie came out, and then, like... So they were like, they basically put it up to Twitter. They were like, hey, if you like this idea, tweet us at, you know, is Walrus Yes or Walrus No? And so people tweeted in. They said, yeah, we want to see this movie.
That's great.
So he went and made it. And then another fun fact. I was thinking of it whenever you were saying how your buddy knows John and they mm-hmm. play soccer together. Their daughters. Well, he told a similar story because when everybody was asking about Tusk and things, he was saying that like, his daughter goes to school with Johnny Depp's daughter, and he's a big fan of Johnny, and he ended up pulling that card and got Johnny Depp to be in the movie.
Mm, I love Johnny Depp.
And that was all because they go in like so. So then it gets going like they're on set and they're you know he's in this character and then they his daughter Johnny's daughter comes to set one day and they like I said their friends are daughters are friends and they were like wouldn't it be cool if they were in the movie together and so there's a scene like in this gas station where Johnny's daughter and Kevin's daughter are like the gas station attendants and stuff.
Aww.
And so it's just kind of funny how like it's a you know
networking.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I mean, I go talk to like college and high school students all the time, and people want to know like how did everything happen, and it's like literally networking is the. You could have no career about or no college degree about you at all, and still have a career through networking mm-hmm. specifically. Because if people trust you. It's just trust. If people are like, she's good people, send her on. People do that.
Yeah. That's really the excuse for this show more than anything.
Mm.
I mean, I love talking. I love, you know, meeting people and music and everything else. But this show has enabled me to meet so many cool people that I probably would never have done on my own. So, I went to the pageant, actually just Halo Bar last night. No, I didn't go to the show. I was at another show, and I stopped by afterwards for the Halo Bar show, and I run into like six people I know there. Like, and then it was kind of funny because there's this kid, or not kid, man, Alex, and he goes, and I saw him like a year ago. It's probably been a little while, but I saw him like a year ago at a show, and he goes. And we made eye contact and recognized. He goes, man, I see you everywhere. And I'm
aww,
like, oh, that's
good for you.
And I'm like, good, man. I'm trying to be out everywhere. And
I'm such a hermit. I stay at home. Like, I'm a very homebody person. Like, I'm a professional extrovert, but I'm a total introvert personally. And, like, it's weird because people expect me to go out all the time mm-hmm. and, like, be out in the world. It's like, I just want to be at home doing my thing and, like, chilling with as few people possible forever.
Sure. I was wondering if you got to actually, you know, for the local produce show, if you were actually able to make it to a lot of those live shows or things like that to participate in these things. Like,
yeah. Well, anything that we filmed, we were there.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Obviously, but, you know, as far as like going out, I mean, it sucks because if I have a night where I'm free, it is so important to me that I sleep because I don't sleep very much. And so, people are always trying to get me out to see things, their bands and, and I love being invited and it's not anything personal. It's just like, you have to have downtime.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you exude yourself so much out, you just want to go home and sleep.
Yeah.
And so literally if I'm not somewhere, it's because I'm in bed.
I was wondering, like, because, like for me, like my day job, I work for a school district, and I do custodial work.
Nice.
My
dad was a custodian, yeah. So.
It's not my it's my bigger aspirations, but it's definitely stability.
Good.
In my life where you know I don't always have a lot of stability. You know, things are kind of crazy with the rest of, you know. But it's nice to have all that, and so I do this, you know, running around, going to shows, and recording, and things in the evenings. But I often wondered, like for you, that you're on the radio and you're listening to music and playing music and talking music, and if you still wanted to keep doing that in your off time and stuff. And like for me, music is now this, you know, that's my hobby, that's my release, and going out and doing all this. But that's, if I had to do it for a living, I don't know how much I would still enjoy it as much, you know.
It does ruin it a bit for you, especially when you start to see how things actually work. I'll tell you this much, I've never been more into political radio than I am in my life right now. I am so into talk radio and both sides. I like to hear both sides of the aisle. I'm very much a liberal. I'm pretty open about, I'm not supposed to be open on it about it on Keishi, but since this is a podcast, I'll tell everybody. I'm very left, socially, I guess. And for me, it's good for me to hear both sides of the argument. So I listen to a lot of our sister station, 97.1. Mm-hmm. And then I listen to a lot, or I watch a lot of MSNBC while I'm on the air in the studio. So I get a pretty good helping of political talk radio, and I get kind of passionate about that. In fact, Lou Prince from Vintage Vinyl and I were talking earlier this week about, he was like, you got to go into TV political radio. And, you know, he was our political talk. And I'm like, dude, I'm just studying it right now, and I'm just kind of feeling out where I fit in.
Sure.
But man, I'm so I'm just so ignited by people that have such opinions of their side and are smart enough. Both sides are, they come from levels where they find things out and they aren't afraid to say them.
Yeah.
And for me, radio, life in general for me is communication. I love expressing myself, and when I am suppressed and I'm not allowed to, I'm a rabid animal. I'm just like, if I'm not allowed to say exactly how I feel, because I'm kind of a brash person anyway, it's just the worst nightmare. Like, I like to just say what I want to say. And so I feel like, and that's our First Amendment right, right? So I just feel like when I go home, I listen to a lot of really, how do I explain it? Like, I listen to a lot of, like, Massive Attack, like, ambient music that doesn't really have a place it's going. It's just very, just chill zone.
Okay.
But yeah, otherwise I'm listening to talk radio of either side of the aisle, or I'm just quiet, or people always want to know like what I'm into. And I said this earlier, how I'm going back in time where everybody my age is going ahead in time.
Sure.
And like, it's more current. My soul is literally like 48 years old.
Right.
And I'm a man inside, cause I have to deal with so much male masculinity every day. But, I don't really listen to a lot of music in my downtime. I do love going to shows though. And for me, I have to really plan it out in advance. Like if it's a weeknight show, I have to be like, all right, I gotta go home and nap. And I gotta, my life is literally a schedule, because I love sleeping so much, and it's so beneficial to your health. And so people are always like, oh, you're young. It's like, I'm not getting cancer when I'm 50. Like, I'm going to sleep when I'm tired, and I'm going to not go somewhere if I'm tired. And it's such a lame excuse, but it's my body and mind, so I have to be healthy.
There's usually some point in the weekend or whatever it is where I'll hit a wall and I crash.
It's 10 p.m.
Yeah.
On Fridays is where I'm dead.
But sometimes the addiction is stronger than my willpower, because I go to shows tired.
Good for you.
Like, I'm just like, it's...
Yeah, I'm absolutely do that. Like, that's just not who I am today.
Right.
Like, I just love sleeping.
Yeah, I do love sleeping myself too, but I love live music, and I laid out my schedule. My 30th birthday is next Friday.
Happy birthday,
the 19th.
Early.
Yeah, thank you.
thank you.
Yeah, I laid out my whole week. I'm going to like five or six shows.
Good
or something.
Good for you.
Like, so I was like, last week of the 20s, I'm gonna do it the only way I know how.
Good for you.
Go to a bunch of live music. And
I spent, my birthday was on a Saturday. My 30th birthday this year was on a Saturday. And so we went balls to the wall. We went to Herman, Missouri, my favorite place to go. Yeah,
that's where my wedding was at.
I told Tim, I'm like, we're going to buy one of these old houses, fix it up, and we're going to just have a bed and breakfast. That's my retirement plan, yeah. Is that. But we went to Herman, and I love the Oak Glen Winery so much. And we went out there, and my mom and my stepdad and my mom's best friends and all 13 of my best friends, we all got together and, like, just killed it. Like, yeah. So drunk. I fell asleep on a fireplace mantle, like, randomly. It was, like, 10, you know. And everybody was like, you have to stay up. I'm like, no. Like, I'm 30 now. You all are in your 20s or whatever. And I'm like, I'm out. So, yeah, do it up how you want to do it. And don't.
Yeah.
Something that I've learned since being 30, since March, and this is so funny that it's only been like 3 months, but once you turn 30, the hangovers are worse. However, you have this great innate ability. And I think it's because you're getting older. And you know how, like, old people aren't depressed every day because they don't. They're just accepting that, like, every day might be their last because if they're in their 80s.
Yeah, a lot of them just don't give a shit.
Right. It starts at 30. Yeah. You start to pick that innate ability up where you're like, you know what? I'm not going to do something if I don't want to do it. Right. And that's where I am in life. And my husband the other day, we went out to dinner or something, and he's like, what do you want? And I told him exactly what I wanted. And he's like, I like this, you know? Because you cut the shit. Like in Ryan Seacrest's words, like, you cut the shit and you do... you do what you want to do after 30 because you know who you are. You aren't trying anymore to impress people you don't have to. And I'm just, it's zero shits given at this point. It's 30. So you're going to love it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited.
Welcome to the dark side.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we've been, we're like an hour 20.
Nice.
So I think we covered about everything.
Okay.
anything else you want to plug or
let's see. Well, the local produce section, the next episode's July 1st is when we're gonna debut it. Please go watch it because it's so great. I want to say I hope Bernie Sanders can keep up with Hillary Clinton in this next election. I don't know what's gonna happen with that. And you know, just love each other. I feel like people are big assholes these days.
Yeah,
let's not.
That's
my ending statement.
Right.
Hashtag let's not.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
This has been incredible. I thank you for taking time out to do this. And,
no problem. Good job, Shane.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell you, man, to come on the show.
Maybe
we can get him on.
If he would last an hour 20, I would be impressed. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Lauren. And, everybody check out the local produce section and listen to KC95.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.